Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up, VSiN by the books. Dave Ross will join us. We'll go over the U.S. Open, who he likes going forward, thoughts on round one, and what he's looking for the rest of the weekend. Get his thoughts on baseball, NFL, see if he's got any World Cup thoughts. World Cup, U.S. in action on Friday. And I've sensed just everywhere I'm going, you know, gym, bank, people watching the World Cup on their phones, people watching it, talking about it. U.S. plays Australia Friday, 3 o'clock Eastern, U.S. minus 170 favorite, draw plus 340, and Australia's plus 425 as the U.S. looks for their second win. So I've sensed a lot of enthusiasm. Like I said, just you go places and people are watching it, people are into it, which is always fun. Gives you that sense of a community that everyone's kind of watching the same thing, talking about the same thing. But before we get to Dave and get some thoughts on the U.S. Open, I know we've done a lot of NBA recently with the finals and everything else, but I do think the Giannis Antetokounmpo trade here is probably imminent. The draft on Tuesday, which again, the draft just continues to feel like it's sneaking up here and come out of nowhere. That will be Tuesday the 23rd, the first round, and then Wednesday the 24th, the second round. Feels like Giannis is going, and it seems like it's between Boston and Miami. And I've said this for a couple months and really dating back to February, we're talking about, I just can't see Miami as a destination for multiple reasons. Do they have enough to get him? I mean, you're talking about what Tyler Hero and Khalil Ware and some draft picks. Maybe the picks are valuable down the road, but that's not really a lot. It's not really a lot. And again, maybe the draft picks turn into lottery picks and, you know, doesn't work out. Giannis is older and you're sitting on good picks, but that's, I mean, you're asking a GM to save his job between now and then. You want something you can sink your teeth into now and something you could bring the fans now, even if it's, you know, young picks. Young players' picks, but you want the picks to be, you know, somewhat current, somewhat soon. And I think Boston's just going to win the trade. And I read text a week or so ago about, you know, Giannis being available and not only available, which we knew, but possibly headed to Boston. Again, that was before a lot of other people were reporting it. I just think Jaylen Brown ends up being the best asset available in some sort of deal where Brown maybe goes to the Clippers. The Bucks get the fifth pick. The Bucks get other picks. I can really see that happening. So we'll see if that transpires soon. It sounds like it's going to happen sooner rather than later. And from some reports, now some reports say, you know, Miami's the favorite. Miami's very live. Other reports say it's Boston. And, you know, Boston is just kind of, they've made several offers. And Milwaukee is just choosing between their offers. Those are ones that I've heard sort of off the record, those reports. So we'll see. I would expect him to go to the Celtics, but will be fun here to get that sort of bombshell in the dead part of the sports season here. I know we got World Cup and U.S. Open going on, but Giannis changing teams, I would imagine, happens here before the draft, which would mean it's going to happen, you know, maybe by the time you listen to this or maybe by the next podcast, but you would imagine it's, and for some people, just mercifully get it over. So sick of hearing about it. It's been years now. He's going this place, he's going that place. But I would imagine that's happening sooner rather than later. Before we get to Dave, baseball, you know, we're recording this as the Thursday games are being played. The Yankees are taking on the White Sox right now. The Yankees are just a wagon right now. It's hard to believe that no Judge, no Stanton, no Freed. I mean, that's three possible Hall of Famers. They've missed Rodon for part of the year. They've missed Cole for a lot of the year. I mean, really four Hall of Famers when you think about it, four possible Hall of Famers. I don't know if Freed will get in. Judge is definitely, Stanton's kind of 50-50, maybe even 60-40, yes, as long as he has another healthy year or two, which might be asking a lot at this point, but you get the idea. I mean, you basically had four Hall of Famers missing chunks of the season, and they're right there. I mean, they're right, not only right there, they're kind of running away with the division, minus 500 favorites to win the division. Tampa, after getting swept by the Dodgers, has really come back down to earth, which is not a surprise. You know, Toronto, 22-1, Baltimore, 50-1, and the Red Sox having a terrible year at 100-1. I mean, just think about all the guys the Yankees have missed, and they're just a really good team right now. It's no guarantee. Once you get to October of anything, you could lose a best out of five. You face Seattle, who's got good pitching. Scooble's going to go somewhere. Maybe Scooble goes to Tampa, and they got Scooble, McClanahan, and Rasmussen, and they eliminate you. I mean, anything's possible, but it's a really watered-down American League, and it's a really strong Yankee team that you would figure, A, is going to get some of these guys back, you know, Freed and Judge and Stanton, and these guys, some sooner than others. None of them seem all that close to coming back. Stanton was pretty close to coming back, and then I guess tweaked it with a hamstring. Tweaked the hamstring, and you know, it's always something with him, but he does hit in the playoffs for the most part, and he hits a ton in the playoffs, including a couple years ago. He's had a great playoff run here for the Yankees. But you look in the Central, nobody in the Central ever scares you. Guardians, Yankees beat them in the playoffs all the time. Not a lot of power in terms of the pitching, in terms of the offense. White Sox, fun story, fun team, but what you're seeing what the Yankees are doing to them now. Seattle minus 170 to win the West. That would be the one team. That would be the one team where, you know, I don't totally trust those guys. Those guys can be a little bit overrated in a big spot. Gilbert and Wu and, you know, Kirby, it just feels like they're, you always expect a little more from them, including last year when they got up 2-0 in the ALCS on the road. And then, you know, going home up 2-0 for 3-4-5 and had a lead in game 7, couldn't get out of that series, a terrible loss. But that's dangerous pitching. But bottom line, Yankees probably should get out of the American League. I felt really good, remember, a couple years ago when they had Soto. I thought they would get to the World Series, but I thought they would lose. I kind of have a feeling this year of the same thing where I'd be a little bit, you can never be surprised if they're not in the World Series because a lot has to happen to get there, and you got to win short series, which can be random. But Yankees are far and away, to me, the best, most dangerous, most complete team in the American League. And again, going to get guys back, and they'll probably make, you know, some moves, add some bullpen guys, which they need. That's one thing you don't really trust, the Bednars and the Dovals and the Jake Birds of the world. That's a shaky bullpen. And you could use two really good guys, three probably. At the, you know, three's asking a lot. It's hard to get three bullpen guys, and they tried to make over their bullpen late last year, and it didn't work at the deadline, but maybe they'll have better luck this year. Maybe they can move some of the excess starters once you get to the playoffs, the Warrens, the Weathers of the world. Securing those last 9 or 10 outs of a big game could be an issue, but man, it's a really good Yankee team. The other one I would watch, and we'll talk about the Mets a little bit with Dave, although it's funny with the Mets. Every time you think they're done, they win a couple games. Every time you think they're about to make a run and get back into it, they lose a couple games. It feels like they've been 5.5 games out of a playoff spot for a long time now, which 5.5 games, it's not a ton. It's a good week. It's a good 10 days. I mean, you're really not out of it. There's not that many teams that are out of it completely. But the one I would watch, Philly is only 7 back of Atlanta entering play Thursday. Philly's 4-1 to win the division. Acuña's out. Acuña's out a while. You know, Strider's hurt. I wouldn't be shocked if Philly hunted them down with Wheeler and Sanchez going every, you know, fifth day. That's really good pitching. Philly at 4-1, I don't think is the worst bet, especially if you made bets on Atlanta to win the division at some point this year, whether it was before the year, you know, plus 250 or early in the season, plus 180, even money or whatever. That's not a bad little insurance policy to play on Philly plus 400. Before we get to Dave, I saw this too, the Home Run Derby, which I'll actually be here in a couple of weeks as we hit the dog days of summer, going back to outs instead of the timer. I think this is a good move. I think that it just got so chaotic watching the Home Run Derby where they pitch the ball, it you know, guy hits it a mile, and by the time the ball lands, you're focused on the next pitch, and the guy's hitting the next pitch, and you can't really tell, did the first ball go out? And there's just a lot happening at once. I think it's longer this way with the outs, and it can be tedious and monotonous both ways, but I think this was a good move as Major League Baseball going back to outs. I think you get 15 outs, 20 swings, something like that, but you get the idea. No timers, back to outs, so that will be relevant here. You're still about 3 weeks away from the Home Run Derby All-Star Game. That's usually, you know, July 11th, 12th, around that point. So we're getting there. All-Star teams announced pretty soon. All-Star game announced. I would imagine the National League would be a big favorite once you get to the All-Star game. If you remember, I gave out some long shots last year. Alonso at 45-1 was like minus 500 to win the MVP of that game. And went to extra innings. It was a bad beat. Schwarber won the Home Run Derby. But that's the time of year you're looking at. You know, All-Star game around the corner. You count down to the Hall of Fame game, which is a good 6 or so weeks away. But Home Run Derby, All-Star game, NBA draft, NBA free agency. We are certainly in the dog days of summer. Man, really could have used another week or so of Knicks Spurs. I know if you're a Knicks fan, hey, we had the parade, and it was funny watching the parade with Tyler Kulak getting confused for a fan and the cops, and he's a Knicks guard. Had a good game on Christmas, was looking like he might be a contributor. Didn't really play, I don't think, at all in the playoffs. Maybe played in some garbage time, but I don't think played in the finals. Some cops thought he was a fan. They tried to stop him, which was pretty good. But could have used another game or two of that. I was thinking about that Tuesday night, saying, man, if the Spurs did not blow either a 30 or a 16-point lead, if they just won one of those games, we're sitting there for a dramatic Game 6 and who knows, possibly a Game 7. But not the case. The Knicks, as we know, are NBA champions, which is still kind of hard to believe. But let's talk to Dave Ross. Let's get his thoughts. U.S. Open, baseball, NFL, more of that is next. This Should Have Been More podcast. All right, we're back. Should Have Been More podcast. VEASAN by the Books is the most popular show in the country, especially in the mornings. But the host, the star, He joins us once again. It is Dave Ross. Dave, usually we have you on trying to rally your Mets. You want to babble about the Cowboys, but today we have a special event. It is the U.S. Open. First off, thanks for coming on.
Oh, man, it's always good to be on with you, Will. And I don't know if the Mets are salvageable at this point of the season. I mean, we can try to talk it into existence. I don't know if it's a thing or not, but I love the United States Open. Look, I like all four majors, as you well know. My favorite major of all is actually the Open, or as we call it, the British Open, because we're snobby like that. And I think this year's U.S. Open so far, it is playing more like an American links-style golf course. And I love to see it because what it shows, Will, is these guys suffer out there in the elements in the wind just like I do when it's nice outside. So it's nice to see those guys have to put their best foot forward. No easy tracks out there for four grueling days to see who is the best in the United States of America this year.
All right. That was going to be my first question. What's your favorite? I'll ask it this way. What is your pecking order? Because I've known from doing shows for you and listening to you that the Open, I think Matt Youman still calls it the British Open, which I respect the stubbornness. What is your pecking order and why? Why is your order the way it is?
Normally it's because of the elements. It's not that I like to see the guys suffer, but to be able to see them play in rain and wind as you normally always get wherever they're going to play in the RNA, in the Rota, as they say over there, for the British Open or the Open Championship, I just always found, like, for me as an American, because we don't play that style of golf, I'm fascinated by it. I'd love to go over there and make the pilgrimage and, go play over there at the old course in Scotland, the birthplace of golf, because I think you see a lot of Americans that have gone over there and, Scottie Scheffler winning over there last year, winning the Open Championship. It takes a while, it seems like, for American players to go over there and kind of learn that style. And rarely do we see that here in the United States. So when you play Augusta, who doesn't love Augusta, right? I mean, it's such a beautiful thing to see each and every year. But you know what you're getting. It very rarely do you get elements there at Augusta National. Normally, everything is pristine. There's just no variance there because they take such good, great care of the course that you know exactly what you're getting every year. Over there, you have no idea what you're getting from day to day, from early shift to afternoon wave at the British Open. And to see that kind of this year at the U.S. Open, that's, I think, why I'm enjoying this so much. But I'd say the Open Championship's probably my favorite, followed by Augusta closely, and then the U.S. Open, and then the PGA. And nothing against the PGA Championship, but, Will, it doesn't have a characteristic. Like, the U.S. Open we know is going to be brutal every year, just by the courses they play. And normally, by the way, the USGA sets it up. The Masters, because of, again, what I talked about, that it's just so regal, and we know what we're getting every year, and that never changes. We love that. And then the British Open, because it is so unpredictable with the elements, I think why those three are a cut above the PGA.
So far, what has surprised you here? Recording in late afternoon here on a Thursday, Rory playing well, Scheffler playing okay. What has surprised you? What has disappointed you? Auber in the mix here. What are some of your takeaways?
Yeah, it's one of those kind of wait and see approaches because we knew the weather was going to play such, I'd say for betting purposes, chaos as to when guys were teeing off in the Thursday, Friday waves. And then once we get to the weekend, Will, and we get to that Saturday, Sunday, we know what the weather's going to look like. We know what time these guys are going off. I think it's going to be a little bit more predictable. Ironically, I think it'll be easier to handicap on a Saturday, Sunday than it's been for the first 2 days of this tournament because of those weather switches that we're getting here. So I'm not really too surprised by anything. Maybe surprised that Rory's playing so well, if you will. I guess it's all arbitrary here what is good in these weather conditions. But, you don't see Rory a lot these days. He's not a grinder out there anymore on the PGA Tour. He's a made man. When you win back-to-back majors, picks and chooses when he wants to play. And I think you kind of go, well, can Rory just now, is he good enough, great enough to just show up at majors and go win them? Apparently he is. And I think what we're seeing in Rory this year, by maybe not winning with his best stuff to repeat at Augusta, is he's finally figured out the secret to the all-time greats, which is I don't need to be great to beat everybody else. I need to be really good. And my really good can be better than pretty much the entire rest of the field. And I think Rory's starting to figure that out. And that makes those guys really dangerous. Tiger Woods would say that he could eliminate certain guys mentally, that he knew, man, I don't have to worry about X, Y, and Z. I might have a handful of guys that I know can really play on my level. So I don't need to necessarily push the envelope all the time. That's what true greatness is. And Rory might be right in that window of it.
Who did you like coming in?
I kind of liked Cam Young a little bit. And I felt like, I know people were concerned about his issues, two over par to shoot his first round today. Certainly not out of the golf tournament here. You know, could end up starting off the day five back on a Friday. That's I don't want to say it's nothing, but I am a little bit concerned because you're getting reports. He's got that, what's that, KT tape, whatever those athletes are putting all over their body. And you're seeing a lot more tape than you are skin on Cam Young. So he might have something that he's hiding from the general public here. But New York tough, New York course, fits his attitude. You know, as the reigning defending players champion now, the last thing for him right now on the resume is a major championship. Excelled at the Ryder Cup again. Hard, as tough of conditions as you'll get in playing in a Ryder Cup in and of itself is tough. Then to win a Players in the manner in which he did, I think he's checking all the right boxes. I still wouldn't be surprised, unless there really is some undisclosed injury, that he's not around on Sunday here. New York tough, it just feels like a Cam Young type week.
What's a fair over-under for winning score? Winning score will be what?
I think the wind is supposed to be rougher, if you will, ironically, on the leaders later in the afternoon on Saturday and Sunday. So I do think that's still going to suppress the scores from the very best that are playing the best this week. I still think even par might be good enough to win it. Just remember, in the history of the U.S. Open at Shinnecock, they played it four times in the history. Will, there are three players that have logged numbers in the red under par in the history of Shinnecock and U.S. Opens. So are we really going to get three equaling the first four? Are we going to get three more in red numbers? I don't think so, man. I still think, look, one under par, I think you'd sign for that card today and say, I'll see you in the clubhouse and see if anybody can catch me. I think even par might be good enough as well. It's just traditionally the way this thing plays out. And the USGA, remember this, because the conditions are going to be rough on Thursday, they made the course as easy a setup on Thursday that it'll play all week. So even though the winds might come down, the USGA might tinker with those hole locations a little bit to make them slightly tougher. They don't want to see multiple players in red numbers. I don't think we'll get that. I do think we could be talking on a Monday that, yep, even par was good enough to win this version of the United States Open again.
Scale 1 to 10, your level of interest, excitement for the World Cup is what?
Wait, what is 1? What is 10?
1 is low, 10 is high.
Do I have truth serum in this class?
You do. You're filled with truth serum.
It's a two.
I'm not a
World Cup guy. Look, you know, if I believe that we will win. If the United States gets me excited about it, I do the bar circuit with the people. I've done that every 4 years. I'll go put a scarf on, maybe even a visor, and, you know, like be a soccer guy for a couple days there and do all the chants that they do and drink a Guinness. I'll do all of that. But to sit here and tell you, Will, that I'm going to watch by myself, nah, that's not happening. I'm watching baseball. I'm immersed in the U.S. Open for the next 4 days. But next week, you know, kind of a lag in the sports season. The United States in their third match. We'll see what they do on a Friday against Australia. Then maybe I'll get more into it. But no, I'm not watching Chechnya against you name a country. It's not happening for me.
Yeah, and it's fun. I liked it more. Previous years, it would be on, like, you know, 9 in the morning, 8 in the morning. You wake up, it's something on in the background. Yeah. The draws have been pretty good if you've been able to play those selectively.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm more with you than not. What baseball, if I needed one bet right now, baseball future, win total, award. I'm coming, man, I need a winner, Dave. What my best bet right now from currently available numbers is what?
Well, are we looking for a longer shot on the board?
Whatever you want.
I think we should look back at Cy Young in the National League, which has been riveting to start off, right? And I get it, the Miz right now, and, you know, we're looking at Sanchez and the Phillies and saying, all right, it's a two-horse race here. Here's my concern there, and certainly Shohei Ohtani, his numbers have drifted back to where they were kind of preseason, 30, 35 to 1. If the Brewers keep ascending at this rate, when do they shut him down or limit the innings towards the end of the year, knowing that we did all this last year, right? We were the number one seed. Where'd that get us? Got us knocked out by the Dodgers and swept away. So I'd rather have my young stud and rest him up. Does that impact the Cy Young discussion? It could. I know that Paul Skenes feels like an afterthought, but we're really getting mid-double digits on Paul Skenes at this stage. And the Pirates are going to need Paul Skenes to be great down the stretch to make, whether or not, I don't know that anybody can run down the Brewers anymore in that division, but to at least be a wild card. Is it? Are we crazy that we're looking past Paul Skenes right now at a number that if you blindly set it, kind of like Scotty Scheffler at any tournament, if you get Scotty at 10-1, if you get Paul Skenes at near 15-1, don't you just have to put a pizza money bet on it and just see how the season plays out, see which guys get shut down or limited, and maybe the voters take that into account? And if Skenes has an incredible second half, aren't we going to look at ourselves and go, why didn't we grab that? We need a ridiculous number on Paul Skenes.
I agree. I think that's a little too long. And you look at his numbers and the way he's discussed, like, man, he's having a down year. He's not on the same level as him. He's still got pretty good numbers. And there's still a lot of baseball to be played. He almost won Cy Young a couple years ago as a rookie.
Yep.
I forget if he finished second or third. I mean, he was barely in the big leagues by this time. I think he'd been called up by now, but it was like late May and he was just so dominant. I get it's different. I get there's Mizorowski involved in Sanchez and it's a great race. Otani has fallen off a little bit, but I agree with the sentiment. In terms of Skenes, I think that's very, very much a playable number. All right, the Mets are still. I feel like every time I look, they're 5.5 out of a wild card spot. They're in this little betwixt and between thing where they can't quite get back in the mix. Every time you're getting ready to like completely give up on them, it's like they win a couple games. Every time you think they're about to make a run and maybe get back within shouting distance, they lose a couple games. The Mets are done. The Mets are not done. Where you're here with your Metropolitans.
Well, if we can move them into the American League, we're a playoff team, right? I mean, the American League sucks. Let's just be honest. The junior circuit is terrible, okay? It's the Yankees that get back Aaron Judge. They're a steamroller, and we're all infatuated with what the White Sox are doing. Great little story, but come on. Are we really taking the White Sox seriously long term? And then, Seattle is playing awful baseball. What are they, a game over as we talk here? And they're winning their division. So I look at that in contrast with the National League, and I go, the Brewers are really darn good. We get that. The Dodgers are the Dodgers going for a three-peat. They're excellent. The Phillies, all of a sudden, once they fire their manager and get Donnie Baseball in there, they look like they're juggernauts again. And we know that the Braves are going through injuries, and yet they're great. So because the National League is so thick at the top, that it's the underbelly is going to be really tough to get. Now, the teams that the Mets would have to chase down, do we take them seriously, i.e. the Nationals, the Cardinals, for staying power? I mean, on the surface, I'd say no. But again, I mean, the Mets have got to figure out, what are we doing with some of this starting pitching? Are you going to make that run with Kodai Senga? Are you going to make that run with Sean Manaea? Maybe, but that's what they're rolling out there two times out of every 5 days. And you're banking on Nolan McClain to be this ace of aces, and he's good, but he's shown stretches where he hasn't been so good either. So I'm starting to look at it and go, do the Mets have enough pitching? And we'll figure out what it's going to be with Peralta. And then we're hearing the rumors of Bo Bichette that he's going to opt out of the deal. And if so, do you have to consider trading him before the deadline? Same thing with a Peralta. Like, these are the type of discussions that before I can blindly and with my heart play the Mets in the second half, what is management going to do? Because are they going to eat those deals? And was Bo Bichette a one-year rental? Was Peralta, with all the assets you gave up in the farm system, a one-year rental? Because if that's the case, you might want to try to get back on some of that and deal those guys if you don't think you're a playoff team or it's not going to happen this year. Those are the real questions I need answered. Because if you tell me we're not only going to keep those guys, we're going to buy in some more assets and get another frontline starter, then yeah, then maybe Uncle Stevie pushes more chips to the center of the table because money is no object for Steve Cohen. And the Mets really do become a playoff team. And then if they get in, you get Lindor back here, we hope, at the end of this month here in June, all of a sudden they look like a viable offense again.
Is there a team you think is kind of lying in the weeds that you think can make a run, either American League or National League?
You know that it's been really painful to watch the Kansas City Royals play baseball, and they're one of the worst teams right now in the American League. They keep blowing games because their bullpen is so unreliable. They've had a ton of leads in the month of June that they have not held. I get back to, it's such a bad league overall that if, again, now they got issues offensively with some injuries to Pasquantino and the like, if you could, the older starters, what are they going to do? If they can go get an arm in the bullpen, I still like this team. And I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that they could end up in that wild card discussion. And that might be one of those teams. There's always a team at this point in June that the general public doesn't see coming and thinks you're ridiculous to talk about them now, whether they're 15 games under, 12 games under, whatever it might be. Well, that Division One is so bad, but you have to feel like, can you get back to 500? 500 might be good enough to get you a wild card this year. It's a long road back, but I think the talent is there. Short of that, the Rangers, you keep waiting for them to hit because they do have the pitching. I just don't know if I trust them. The A's, it's almost the inverse is true. Love the lineup, but they don't have the pitching. So there's so many infallible teams, but the American League, whether it's the Blue Jays, the Orioles, or the Royals, or the Rangers, teams that are under 500 right now, one of those teams is going to make a run and be a wild card team. I'm just not sure which one out of the group it's going to be.
What World Series right now, what would you pick? Two teams.
Is this admissible in a court of law?
Whatever you want.
All right. Well, Your Honor, I would quietly say the Yankees in the American League. As an upstanding Met fan, we can never really fully admit that as little brother. But, I mean, look, when you get Judge back, and for the Yankees to be able to do what they've done without him.
And Fried and Stanton, which is pretty remarkable when you think about it.
Right? You get those guns back? I mean, that's like three major acquisitions at the trade deadline for any other team. So they're just going to get those guys back naturally. And to be able to see the Rays kind of come back to the pack a little bit, they've hit the skids, which I think we all thought they would. You see the numbers for the Yankees to win the East. It's ridiculous. I don't want to lay it, but they're going to win the East. And when they do, seriously, who concerns them in the American League? Cleveland, White Sox, Seattle again. They got the pitching.
Mariners in a short series would be tough at the pitching, and you can lose anyone to a short series. But other than that, your point is well taken. I agree.
So I think it's the Yankees in the American League. And then, you know, the Dodgers, you got to figure out Shohei, the blister. But I think they, like, we got to give Dave Roberts his flowers for the way he managed the club in the postseason last year and the way he used that starting pitching in relief. I think they kind of showed the way and the blueprint for them. It's not so much about the starters being lined up here for October. It's about they have such a wealth of riches that they can say, we don't need all these guys to start. We'll use them in the bullpen again. So give me three elite starters. And I'll figure out four and five, did they use them in bullpen sessions, long relief, if you will, or right out of the pen to close out games. I mean, they play the game differently in October than they do from April to September. And for that reason, it's like two different seasons for them. I still trust the Dodgers as much as I hate to say it. We might get a repeat a couple of years ago, Dodgers and Yanks. Think the ratings would be great. I wouldn't like it as a fan. But I think if you get two behemoths in there, what's not to like as a baseball purist?
Last one. We're in the summer. We're in the dog days. NBA is over. NHL is over. Any TV shows you have started watching? Any TV shows you want to catch up on or that you'd recommend?
Well, you know, it seems odd for a person like me. I never thought I'd like Game of Thrones. And then I watched it years ago and I loved it. And I used to talk to Mitch and Paul about it back when I was in Chicago and they were in Vegas. And our team, our code for teams would be bend the knee. Like, what team's going to bend the knee? We'd always try to sneak in some Game of Thrones vernacular. And then House of the Dragon came on, which is a prequel if you're a geek like me. And then you watch that. That's coming back this month here in June. I am not currently signed up to HBO. I'll do one of those. I'll ditch him for like 6-8 months. It looks like I got to go back and get it because I can't do without House of the Dragon. So I'm immersed in Game of Thrones, and you would think that it's real. It's not, but maybe I should believe in dragons because I believe in Ludwig Oberg's going to win a major. So if I believe that, then why not believe in dragons? So I'm going to be back on House of the Dragon here in just a couple weeks.
I should have asked you this too, so I'll ask it now. We'll close on this. NFL, the Pro Football Guide coming out for VSiN here within the next week or so. What is your boldest take? What is your more almost unconventional take? If we have to exclude the Cowboys to get a real answer, although I think I picked the Cowboys to win the NFC. I think with Downs,
there you go.
The defense was better last year, second half of the year. Offense, we know, is elite. In Philly, who knows? It's a good division, but what is your sort of boldest NFL take?
Well, that's just the thing. If I say that the Cowboys can win the NFC, everybody laughs. If you say the Cowboys can win the NFC, everybody goes, ooh, Will's got a good point. So I will not have the Cowboys in this conversation. I got two bold takes for you. We always get a worst to first, right? Kind of like we always have a team in baseball in May, June that we don't see coming that makes the postseason. There's two teams that I really love this year to do that. And one's in the NFC, one's in the AFC. I love the Falcons. Look, I'm not a lawyer. I said on X the next day, Pierce is going to play week one. You watch. They'll figure out some legalese, figure that out. Doesn't make him a good guy, but he's a really good linebacker, really good edge rusher, can really get after it. That defense is going to be really good. Raheem Morris left the cupboard fully stocked defensively. And then you get an adult in the room offensively, and Kevin Stefanski brings in Tua Tagovailoa. Michael Penix is not even cleared to go out there on 7-on-7s, 11-on-11s yet, even in minicamps and the like. I think Tua's going to have a chip on his shoulder. I think it's his job. And then if for some reason he goes down, Penix should be ready. It's quarterback independent for me. Kevin Stefanski won Coach of the Year twice in Cleveland. Just think about that for a second. He can really coach offense. He'll get that offense back where it was not last year. They got real talent, certainly at running back and wide receiver. Talented young defense. I've hammered their over 6.5 wins. I've played the adjusted win total over 7.5. You can get them over 4-1 to win the division. I would hammer that as well right now. I really like the Falcons. What I think is a very average at best rest of the division in the AFC. My worst to first there, not just because it's proximity for me here in White House, Tennessee. I love the Titans. Love them. Don't like them. Love them. They got adults in the room now. And Robert Saleh, you learn the Jets. It's the Jets, man. Everybody's going to be set up to fail with New York. That's just the way that is. I feel like he can exhale now as the head coach again in Tennessee. And he brings in Brian Daboll to run that offense. Cam Ward is an old soul in a young body. He wants to be coached hard. He wants to be able to coach his teammates the way he's being coached by the head coach and the offensive coordinator now. He is a real leader in year number two. He is going to boom this year. I love Cam Ward. I love that football team. I will not be surprised and will be betting it as an extreme long shot to win the AFC South this year.
I picked them in the VSiN betting guide to win the AFC South. They've been a torturing team to me. I've just kept buying in. They kept just, you know, not only losing, but not covering. Fell for it way too often. I guess I'm going to fall for it again. Totally different, you know, team and set of circumstances, but I think you put it well with Daboll, the coaching staff. Who knows? Maybe a young quarterback that can blossom. And that's a division where teams can pop up. All right, Texans, it's a nice defense, but, you know, they're not the 85 Bears. Stroud has question marks. Defenses can always vary from year to year, so we'll see. It'll be here before you know it. Hall of Fame game. What are we looking at? Another 6 weeks, something like that, 6-7 weeks. So it's coming. It's not here yet, but it's coming.
Well, here's what I like, though, about I want to back a kid like that in the second year, because how many times we talk about quarterbacks and we got to couch what we say around these guys when they take the podium and they're you know, like they can be very, very fragile. That's not this kid at all. He is the anti-diva quarterback. He's like the old school Peyton Manning's, Tom Brady's. You know, he'll get in your you-know-what to his teammates. And in year two, you know, sometimes veterans going to look at you like, who's this kid? He's already got the respect in Tennessee, and now he's got coaches in there. They're going to hold them accountable. That's what this football team needs. And Cam Ward's going to be the first guy to hold himself accountable, and then everybody else in the offense. Watch him emerge as a real threat this year to see that talent level really jump, because mentally, he has got what it takes to play this position with that first overall body and skill set, with the mind. Man, I think it's a huge year for Cam Ward and the Titans.
Dave, always fun, man. VSiN by the books. Where else can we find you?
At D Ross Sports. Please take yourself very seriously on Twitter, as we do, Will.
All right. Rate, review, subscribe. Thank you to Dave Ross. We will be back on Monday. Remember, we will. That's the one that airs VSiN Sunday, 11 o'clock Eastern, if you want to watch it live video version. So see you then. Enjoy the weekend. Happy Father's Day. Talk to you Monday.